I must have slept long and soundly, for it was broad daylight when Van Helsing waked me by coming into my room. He came over to my bedside and said, "You need not trouble about the knives, we shall not do it."
"Why not?"
I asked. For his solemnity of the night before had greatly impressed me. "Because," he said sternly, "it is too late, or too early. See." Here he held up the little golden crucifix. "This was stolen in the night."
"How stolen?" I asked in wonder, "since you have it now."
"Because I get it back from the worthless wretch who stole it from the woman who robbed the dead and the living. Her punishment will surely come, but not through me. She knew not altogether what she did, and thus unknowing she only stole. Now we must wait."
He went away on the word, leaving me with a new mystery to think of, a new puzzle to grapple with.
The forenoon was a dreary time, but at noon the solicitor came, Mr. Markand, of Holman Sons Markand and Lidderdale. He was very genial and very appreciative of what we'd done, and took off our hands all cares as to details. During lunch he told us that Mrs. Westenra had for some time expected sudden death from her heart, and had put her affairs in absolute order. He informed us that with the exception of a certain entailed property of Lucy's father, which now in default of direct issue went back to a distant branch of the family, the whole estate, real and personal, was left absolutely to Arthur Holmwood. When he told us so much, he went on, "Frankly, we did our best to prevent such a testamentary disposition, and pointed out certain contingencies that might leave her daughter either penniless or not so free as she should be to act regarding a matrimonial alliance. Indeed, we pressed the matter so far that we almost came into a collision, for she asked us if we were or were not prepared to carry out her wishes. Of course, we had then no alternative but to accept. We were right in principle, and 99 times out of 100 we should have proved, by the logic of events, the accuracy of our judgment. Frankly, however, I must admit that in this case any other form of disposition would have rendered impossible the carrying out of her wishes. For by her predeceasing her daughter, the latter would have come into possession of the property, and even had she only survived her mother by 5 minutes, her property would, in case there were no will, and a will was a practical impossibility in such a case, have been treated at her decease as under intestacy, in which case Lord Godalming, though so dear a friend, would have had no claim in the world, and the inheritors, being remote, would not be likely to abandon their just rights for sentimental reasons regarding an entire stranger. I assure you, my dear sirs, I am rejoiced at the result, perfectly rejoiced.